This is The Camp with Zach Heilprin and The Athletic's Jesse Temple.
Yes, welcome in. Another episode of The Camp. Badgers more than halfway through spring ball. They will be back on the field for practice number 9 on Thursday morning. We'll talk about practice number 8 coming up in a little bit, but we have more to talk about with the transfer portal. Jesse, it officially opened this week. Wisconsin already has two players in there with Nick Evers, as we talked about on Sunday, and now TJ Bowlers, the former four-star recruit, outside linebacker recruit, moved to defensive line. He is in there now as well. I assume we'll see some more names. I guess I'm not surprised by either of those names being in there at this point. I think that's fair to say, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair to say. It's a couple players who were not in a position to see a significant role. Obviously, Evers was working with the third team offense and had no clear path to playing. And TJ Bowlers had worked himself into a second team defensive line role, but at best was going to be a rotational piece and has a couple years of eligibility and wants to see if he can get more playing time somewhere else. So no, neither of those moves are particularly surprising.
Was he just a tweener, or as a recruit, maybe he wasn't as good as the recruiting rankings said?
Well, recruiting rankings, you always have to take with a grain of salt. Sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't, but he was in an interesting position just because of his body type. It was eye-opening last spring when he was 278 pounds. That was what his listed playing weight was last season, and yet he was an outside linebacker. That's not really the mold of the outside linebackers that Wisconsin has had or really wants. I thought it was interesting listening to outside linebackers coach Matt Mitchell talk last week about the ideal body size. And even though he didn't want to pigeonhole, he did kind of say, you know, if you get to a certain weight, 270 plus, you don't necessarily have the speed that you're looking for off the edge. And so I don't know what his career would have looked like if they had immediately said, you are going to be a defensive lineman. He was a defensive lineman in high school. Obviously, it's a major jump to make in the college level. I don't know whether that would have impacted his willingness to come to Wisconsin or if he wanted to play outside linebacker. But sometimes guys, their body sizes just don't necessarily match the position they're playing. And it kind of felt like, at least in part, that's what happened to TJ Bowlers.
Yeah. So let's jump into, I mentioned the recruiting rankings because it's kind of where I wanted to go with this.
Yep.
Wisconsin's 2021 class, we spent so much time talking about how much of a stride they had made with that class, right? It was ranked as the 16th best in the country. It was the highest ranked recruiting class Wisconsin had ever gotten. And it has not necessarily played out. And the coaching change certainly plays a role in that. But a lot of the guys that were highly ranked in that class maybe have not necessarily worked out the way that many thought they would at Wisconsin. Now, before we jump into the guys that it did not work out well for, you can also talk about Hunter Wohler. You talk about Ricardo Hallman. You can talk about Jake Chaney. You can talk about Riley Malman. There are a number of really good players, Braylon Allen, that have come out of that class, right? Like Ricardo Hallman was a third-team All-American last year. You have Hunter Wohler, I think one of the better safeties Wisconsin has had, and Braylon Allen put up 2 1,000-yard seasons and would have had another 1,000-yard season last year if he had not been missed some time. So there has been a ton of like talent that has come out of that class, but there's only 7 players left from that 21. And if you include Braylon Allen in that, it's 8 of 21 that either are at Wisconsin or finish their career at Wisconsin. And it just, I think, sells the point, or maybe hammers home the point, that just because it shows up on paper doesn't necessarily mean it's going to end up being great at Wisconsin. Now, the whole thing about Wisconsin was get higher ranked kids coming in to begin with, and then develop them the way that Wisconsin has developed the 3 stars and the lower 4 stars into the success that they've had over the last 30 years. And that just really never truly panned out.
No, it didn't. That has been the thinking, and was the thinking for some time when they had that run. And this was kind of the completion of that run from 2019 to 2021, where it was the 3 best recruiting classes they'd had in the internet recruiting ranking era at the time. They obviously had a really good 2024 class. But if you could just get if you could start at a higher level of player and develop them in the way that they had developed those walk-ons and three stars, well, what could that mean for Wisconsin? Obviously, it's not that easy. There's so many guys that didn't work out that had such high hopes. And the five-star prospect, Nolan Rucci, is now at Penn State vying for a starting job at right tackle. It was just not going to happen for him here for at least another year because he was the left tackle and Jack Nelson decided to come back. The second highest rated player in that class was JP Benchawal, and he still got time to develop. But as of now, not a starter, maybe the sixth guy. At offensive line, we mentioned TJ Bowlers was another four-star prospect. Marcus Allen, the wide receiver, was a four-star prospect, and we know it didn't work out for him here. Jake Ratzlaff had a ton of promise, was a linebacker out of Minnesota, ended up trying to pursue hockey, but never played for Wisconsin. There's obviously Jack Pugh, Brian Sanborn, Deacon Hill, Ayo Adebogan, and then a couple of running backs, Loyal Crawford, Antoine Roberts, had some off the field issues. It's just yet another indicator, probably, that when you look at a recruiting class, it's easy to get excited in the moment, but you never really know until a few years down the road. And this is kind of what it's like for most classes. Maybe you have a third that really pan out, a third who are with the program but not major contributors, and a third who just you'd never really see. It's just, I think, disappointing if you're a Badgers fan because, again, it was the highest rated class and still is that they've ever signed.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And there's still time for, as you mentioned, a couple of guys that maybe haven't made the impact that they thought they were going to. But no matter what, at best, you're hitting at I guess if you include Allen, it's a little bit better than that. But at best, you're hitting at a 33% clip at this point.
Something like that. I believe I'm looking over the roster here. I think it's 8 of the 21 are still with the program. But even a couple of those guys have not carved out major roles yet. Mike Jarvis and JP Benchwell. So, yeah, maybe around a third or so have been major contributors.
So I got the number wrong then. That's what you're saying.
Well, I'm just sliding it in the middle of the conversation. Low key.
Yeah, I think I missed Jackson Aker when I was counting it up. So
how dare
anyway,
you, sir?
Yeah. Eight of 21 are scholarship guys are still there. So that is, you know, obviously not ideal, but it's also what comes with, you know, college athletics. And I think obviously a number of these guys moved on for other reasons than just simply, football, right? Like Nolan Rushi wanted to play. And his brother was gone and Jack Nelson was here. And so moving on to another place kind of made sense for him. But there's a lot of guys that aren't playing football anymore too. And as you mentioned, the running back situation, that crazy situation that happened early in that summer, right? Wasn't that summer? That was summer 2021, wasn't it? With Loyal Crawford and whatchamacallit.
Didn't they? No, they were here.
Right. I'm saying it was during the summer, though, wasn't it?
Okay.
Or was it during fall camp? It's irrelevant. They weren't on the team for.
Yeah.
They weren't on the team for a season. They left before they were even here for a year.
Yeah. August 2021 is when this went down. So
yeah,
there you go.
So, all right. That leads me to a little bit more portal talk here. Wisconsin's lost two guys. They're going to lose more, but I'm going to ask you for an over under here. I'm going to give you an over under here, and you tell me over under the number here. Over under 6.5 players lost to the portal here in the next 2 weeks,
including the two that have already
correct
left. Ooh, I'm going to go. Man, do I think five more guys are going to leave? I'm going to go under.
Okay.
Because I have to pick one or the other, of course.
Yeah.
Never hedge. That's why there's a half. That's why they do it this way.
Yes. can't hedge. You can't hedge.
There's part of me that's like, look, if you were going to go, you knew the situation. You're halfway through spring practice. The portal window is open. Just do it. And there's another part of me that wonders, well, are some of these guys just trying to get a little bit more tape, knowing full well their role isn't going to change between now and the April 30th when the window closes? I just, there's a part of me that struggles to see, well, why wouldn't you have just done it already? What are you waiting for? But we, I mean, if you look, and this is unofficial counting, they've got 86 scholarship guys set to be a part of the program in the fall with the departures of the two that have left. And obviously the NCAA maximum is 85. So there is going to be some movement in some regard. And the other, I'm sure this will be our next topic of conversation, are potential positions to address and players that they're going to offer. So they're going to get some people, but in order to do that, you need some people to not be here. So I think there will still be a couple, but I think I'm going under 6.5 total in terms of scholarship guys.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over on that. I think okay. There are a number of positions where things are a bit loaded. I would say wide receivers, one of them. I would say cornerback, maybe one of them, where maybe some upperclassmen, guys that have been passed by younger players and maybe haven't gotten the reps or aren't getting the reps that they want at this point will head out. I also look at running back and say there's going to be 8 guys in the fall. Really? You're going to have 8 scholarship running backs in the fall? That certainly stands out to me. But we'll see. You're right. If you're going to do it, why not do it now? But I also think that maybe you kind of give yourself some more opportunities here. Maybe someone gets hurt. It's kind of like who was the fullback that transferred in the middle of the season? And then like Quan Easterling, 2 weeks later, he would have been the starting fullback because of injuries. I'm not saying that that's what they're thinking here, but injury wise, they may get an opportunity that if they left right now, they would not get. Nick Evers and TJ Bowlers, I think, are a little bit different in that respect. So I think I'm going to take the over. You were right about the next topic, potential adds from the portal. It was going to go over under mm-hmm. 3.5 players added from the portal. We heard Luke Fickell talk about it on Tuesday morning that he's still not interested in talking about the portal. He said, if I'm talking about it, then they're talking about it in terms of his players. But they said that they're, you know, we're not going to be very active in this spring portal. And right on time, they offered a defensive lineman from the MAC. So, but in terms of straight numbers, 3.5 players added from the portal.
Well, I guess I'm going to go under and say 3, though I have minimal confidence in that pick. There are very clearly some positions that they'd like to address, and it does come down to a bit of a numbers game. I don't disagree with you at all for what you're saying when you're going through the position groups that have the potential of guys leaving. And you figure if you lose there, you would want to add, but I it's hard to know how active they're going to be. But you're right. They offered this kid, CJ West. It's a defensive tackle from Kent State, and got like, I mean, of all the group of 5 players who entered the portal on day one, he might've had the most activity in terms of major schools offering him. So I don't know what the viability of Wisconsin getting him is, but, Wisconsin's not going to sit on its hands during portal season. It's just unclear how active they intend to be.
It feels like defensive linemen, and probably offensive linemen for that matter too, are the most sought after here in the portal. I don't even know if it's particularly close.
Yeah.
If you're seeing a guy like that who I believe was a third team all MAC selection last year, you're seeing him get inundated with offers. It kind of opens your eyes as to why perhaps a Rodus Johnson and a Gio Paez are now playing in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. It's a very hard position to recruit, and especially yeah. experienced players who have had success.
Which is obviously what kind of Wisconsin is looking for. I asked Luke Fickell about the defensive lineman yesterday. Obviously you have James Thompson Jr. who has played a lot of football for Wisconsin, but he's also dealt with injuries and is dealing with injuries now and is playing through them at this point. You have Kurt Neal, who could not look more different than James Thompson Jr. in terms of size, where you have James Thompson Jr. at like 6'6", and you have Kurt Neal, and this was Luke Fickell, this is not me as someone who is short saying this, but like 6'2", with a wink, you know, that's kind of what your top two is, and then you're trying to find guys behind him, right? Like Ben Barton and Cade McDonald, and as you mentioned, Mike Jarvis is still there. And then there's 2 intriguing freshmen, at least in my mind, that are potentially could, I don't know if they'll help this year, but you would hope that maybe Jamel Howard's able to be ready to help you at some point this year. And then obviously Ernest Wheeler Jr., who's the early enrollee, there are, would you feel comfortable about that depth heading into the end of the season?
No, I would not.
But I don't know what they can do about it. You know what I mean? Like,
it's exactly right.
Like, you are in a position here where I don't know that you can improve it drastically other than guys getting better. And that's what you need here. You need a young guy that you won a recruiting battle on in Jamel Howard to take the next step. And we saw him a little bit on Tuesday's practice, him and James Durant. James Durant probably maybe had his best practice putting some guys on the ground, running after guys, but him and Jamel Howard got into it. And so at least he's showing a little bit of that fight. Like, that's maybe more than anything what I want in my defensive lineman, showing some fight. Same thing with the offensive lineman. But we just haven't heard a ton about him, and he's currently repping with the third team. So I don't know that you're going to find your depth from within, and I don't think they're going to be able to find the depth from outside. You're going to have to hope that James Thompson Jr. and Kurt Neal, two guys that have dealt with injuries, stay healthy, and you can find one or two guys to give them some time.
The thing is, Wisconsin has already gone to the transfer portal this offseason to add a defensive lineman.
Yeah, I forgot. Elijah Hills, my bad.
It's okay, but they went the FCS route and got Elijah Hills from Albany, and he's in a spot where it kind of feels like, at best, he could work his way into a rotational piece, but that's not necessarily a given. I will say that the departure of TJ Bowlers, at least in that group, appears to have impacted Hills the most, in that during practice on Tuesday, he was earning those second team reps, and I thought it was his best practice. And yet at the same time, it's also really important to acknowledge that whatever he's doing is coming against a second team offensive line and a second team center who's a walk-on. And so was that what it's going to look like if you play a first team unit? No. On the other hand, it was at least an encouraging sign that he was doing some good things, but that might be your fifth guy at this point, or fourth guy, depending on how it shakes out. So Wisconsin would love for one of those younger guys to emerge and be a playmaker. And another name that I'd throw out there, and I'm not saying it's going to happen this coming season, but Dylan Johnson probably intrigues me as much as anybody among the young defensive linemen, yeah, because of his, I mean, how many guys go undefeated as a high school wrestler and are just
Luke Fickell
dominant? Yeah. There's a clear connection there, but I wonder what he'll be able to do, but I don't know that that's going to happen immediately, especially on the defensive line.
I don't know if you saw this video. They just posted it today, but Wisconsin football asking could you take Coach Fickell down? If you wrestled Coach Fick, could you get a takedown? And every one of those players should have said no. But not every player said no. Quite a few of them said yes, especially among the wide receivers and some of the DBs, like guys that are naturally confident. I think some of the offensive linemen were more realistic and be like, no, there's no chance. There's no chance in hell that I ever could. He's one of the best heavyweights that's ever been, right? Like in the state of Ohio, right? You could probably put him up there and say he might be the best that's ever been in the state of Ohio.
I guess if there's the line of thinking, at least in part, would have to be, I'm 22, he's 50. Maybe, yeah, I got a shot.
Right. If you wrestled him in his prime, is anybody getting a takedown?
Of course not. I wrote this story in the fall when Wisconsin was about to play Ohio State, but it was reminiscing on his college days at OSU. And all the guys were talking about how anybody who came in was a highly touted dude with a huge ego and started jawing at Fickell would get hip tossed, and he would just pick them up and throw them. And these are guys who are like bigger than he was. So no, in his prime, that dude was not to be messed with by anyone.
Yeah. So that's the portal talk. Let's talk a little bit about, unless there's something else you wanted to hit on there.
Well, I do know.
Maybe some other positions that maybe they might look at.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I do wonder what they're going to do on the offensive line. We've said this before. It's a really tough spot because who wants to come in and not be a starter? Maybe they can get somebody good enough, but there is just a significant drop off in terms of experience after really the top four. I mean, Joe Brunner is working with the ones, but doesn't have a ton of playing experience. I don't know what you can do there other than hope you can just build your depth from within, and certainly defensive line based on what we've seen. I don't necessarily know that Wisconsin is going to add a quarterback, though. Without Evers, they now have four scholarship quarterbacks, only three of whom are healthy. and you've got a walk-on for next season. So those are at least a couple of positions. But overall, if I just look at all of it, it's why I'm inclined to go under your number of 3.5. That may also be dictated by who ends up leaving if there are more guys.
Yeah. We'll see. I think there might be like a want to add a veteran tight end, but you talked to the tight ends today. I don't know that they feel the same way. I mean, they've got a veteran in Riley Nowakowski. They got a guy in Tucker Ashcraft that played last year. He's not healthy right now, which is unfortunate. Then you got Jackson McGowan that you brought in out of the transfer portal, and JT Seagreaves, and then some of the young guys. I don't know that that's a position that you would consider adding at either at this point.
I don't know that I see it. But they do have a lot to prove. I do think in talking to them earlier today, they feel like, and Nate Letton mentioned this, at least you got a couple guys who have been a part of this system for a year, and they think it's going to make a substantial difference, because Luke Fickell talked about this after practice on Tuesday. The transition that the tight ends in particular had to make in adjusting to this new offense was as drastic as any position. And Riley Nowakowski was saying, what we were used to doing in the previous offense, you have your hand in the ground, you're blocking, and now they're wide open and in space in different ways. And that takes some adjusting to. Now the hope will be that they've got some people who can be a little bit more productive from an offensive standpoint. But right now, I'm not sure if I see them adding in that position. You just never know.
For sure.
But the other thing that I was going to say is, so the last time we did our show, we talked about Nick Evers transferring. And as it happened, I didn't have a chance to talk to him until after we recorded. And
maybe that's right. Yep.
Irrelevant now that he's gone, but at least he gave his perspective, which I thought was noteworthy about his decision to leave.
Did you want to expand on that?
Sure. I just, didn't want to use up all the air space.
Go for it.
He gave as mature of an answer to all my questions as he could have when I asked him why he felt like now was the right time to leave. And he said, I needed to be realistic about my situation and ask myself the tough questions. And he feels like he can help a team win this fall. I don't necessarily disagree with him, by the way. I just think maybe you've got to find the right level, because it'd be awfully difficult to come into a Power Four type of program where you've got established guys and win the job right away. But I feel like with his skill set, he can go somewhere to give himself a chance. And a couple other things that I asked him, just like, did you feel like you got a fair opportunity? And he said, I'm not sure if there is such a thing as fair, but what he did say is the spirit of favor can be a wonderful thing if it goes your way, but when it doesn't, you just have to accept it for what it is and be professional. I think that's as mature a way as of saying that he was not necessarily getting the favorable reps. And then I also asked, did he have a clear understanding from Phil Longo of what he needed to do to have a chance to compete for playing time? And this to me was probably the best answer that I felt like he gave. He said, I guess the answer would have to be no, because everything I thought was needed didn't result in me getting more reps. He said, I focused on knowledge equals reps, which, as we know, was Longo's big talking point last year, while also getting bigger, stronger, and faster. But unfortunately for me, that wasn't enough. So that's largely what Nick had to say. There's a couple other things which you can certainly read about in my story on The Athletic. But this is the era that we're in of the transfer portal. You can do it multiple times. If it doesn't work out, he's got a lot of talent, and I'm interested to see what ends up happening with him. And I'm also really interested to see long-term. To me, I kind of wonder, time will tell whether he deserved a better opportunity. I don't know. We weren't there in the meeting room, so we don't know where he is in his development, and we know that he was behind last year, but he also felt like he had made up ground and was helping the two guys who were new to the program, Tyler Van Dyke and the early enrollee, Mabry Mattire. So it's like, if knowledge equals reps, those guys could not have come in with much knowledge of what the system was because they hadn't been a part of it. So we'll see.
Do you think a lot of it was because he was not necessarily Longo's guy?
I wonder how much that has to do with it, quite frankly. I know that Nick started expressing an interest or being really interested in Wisconsin before Phil Longo and Luke Fickell were brought on board. And it was the middle of December when he committed. He knew at the time they were going to go after a couple other quarterbacks, and it ended up being two guys that Longo really liked. And now Mabry, that is Longo's guy. And Mabry was getting, they were splitting three reps, but it kind of started to feel like Mabry was getting more of those three reps. So I, you know, you don't know the inner workings of people's thought process, but I do wonder whether that maybe had something to do with it.
All right. So we've talked portal.
Yep.
Talk practice here on Tuesday. I was about to, I think it depends your point of view here on the quarterbacks. I know that a few of our colleagues were very down on them. I thought it was kind of a mixed bag. I actually thought when you look at before what was a horrendous interception, I thought Braden Locke actually had one of his better days, threw a couple just absolute dimes to Vinny Anthony, had another dime to Will Pauling. I think all three of those may have been in Skelly. So it's not real football. If that's how you want to judge it, which I certainly think is fair, but I thought there were some really good throws in those moments, but overall it was just another day from the quarterbacks in general. Would you not agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with it. It's been uneven. And I get some people in the comment section of my stories who say, and I don't disagree with them entirely, like, this is only April. Let's see what happens in the season. And yet at the same time, you and I have been around the team and covering practices long enough to know that the longer those things stack up in April, the more it's indicative of what you might see in the following season. Neither guy has really taken the reins, and neither guy has been that consistent force, if you will. And yes, there's a long way to go. We're only halfway through spring practices. I feel like you would just want to see at least one of them be further ahead. And Locke did have some good moments. And I also had in my notes, and this was in 11 on 11, there was a sequence where he threw high to his receivers on three consecutive incompletions working with the second team offense. And as you mentioned, he had a red zone interception. He didn't see a linebacker underneath. Just, that's inexcusable, even if it's April. But you then mix it with a really good three-play sequence, and it's the same with Tyler Van Dyke. He had a couple great passes during 11-on-11, a completion to Vinny Anthony with a defensive back draped all over Anthony, and then a deep pass down the left sideline to Quincy Burroughs. But on the very next throw, he's got a receiver over the middle and throws behind him for an incompletion and a couple of interceptions. And yes, those were in skeleton drills, but still, I mean, you don't even have any linemen barreling down on you, but he had three interceptions in like a four-play stretch. And so I just feel like you'd want to see more out of those guys. And I asked Luke about the quarterbacks, and he acknowledged, at least in part, he feels like those guys having to constantly rotate between the first and second team offense makes it what he called a tougher situation. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I also think, like, at some point you've got to overcome that. And he wants to see both those guys be more consistent. And he used this term yet again, come out of their shells and leadership and take charge. And he also said the consistency and the demeanor. That's one thing that Luke mentioned last year in regard to Tanner Mordecai and the positive, that no matter what happened, if he threw an interception, he was the same guy. And Luke felt like even at practice Tuesday, he could tell in the body language, if someone threw an interception, it wasn't where it needed to be. And then all of a sudden there's a great play, long catch down the sideline, and they're kind of standing tall. And he said at that position, you can't have those emotional roller coasters. So there's still a lot to work through at the position. By no means has anyone emerged as the top guy, and I don't think either will by the end of spring practices on May 2nd. I just wonder, how much better will one of these guys become to the point that you feel like they can go out there and win you a game as the quarterback on offense next season?
I think it's easier for a guy like Tanner Mordecai, who knew he was the guy,
yep,
to continue to act that way, because he knew from the moment he showed up that he was going to be the guy. And in this case, that's not what's happening here. They are sharing reps. They are going back and forth. And I wonder if, do you think Fickell agrees? I mean, this is Phil Longo's offense, right? So he's the one that's deciding the reps. Do you think he's okay with this going back and forth, or would you rather, you think you'd rather have Longo just pick a guy and just go with it?
That one's hard to say. In part, I wonder if you would prefer one guy to be the number one, but I also think you've got to earn it. And it'd be easy to say, well, just make it Tyler Van Dyke. The dude has been a 3-year starter at Miami. He came here for a reason, to be the guy. There's one season left. Let's roll with him. And yet at the same time, I also think that'd be doing a disservice to the work that Braden Locke is doing. And I don't think you can say one guy is so far ahead of the other. So you've got to earn that number one spot. And I just don't think you can say that about either guy at this point. So I don't really have a problem with them continuing to do this throughout the rest of the spring. But we do know when you get to fall, by week three and presumably, preferably week two, you want to have that number one guy you can go with all the time.
A cynic would say that they are allowing Braden Locke to keep getting number one reps so that he doesn't transfer.
I would not agree with that statement. I think he's done enough to legitimately be in the mix now. My personal opinion is it will still end up being Tyler Van Dyke, even if it's close. But yeah, I mean, from what we're watching, it just kind of feels like neither guy has been consistent enough for us to definitively say that's the guy.
So there was another development on Tuesday that we hadn't seen to this point, and that was RJ Delancey getting some opportunities with some of the top line guys on the outside. He had been working further down with some of the other guys to this point. I'm intrigued by that decision. At the same time, I also will say I think Nysier Forkerian has had a really good spring to this point. I know Luke Fickell said that he is among the most improved, and I know that it's kind of the same comments that at times last year he made about Ricardo Holman. I'm not going to go the – I had an overreaction or no to it. Nysier Forkerian is is set up to have a Ricardo Holman-like season. But I think the bigger thing is there going to be a competition once Ricardo comes back between RJ Delancey and Nysier Forkerian for one of those – that other starting job? And – or how do they get these guys on the field? If they like what RJ Delancey does so much that, you know, he's moving up and you've got Jonas Tekona, there's a lot of bodies there. And that's honestly why I kind of mentioned the quarterback spot as a potential for guys moving on. But there's a lot of bodies there now that you may feel good about. And clearly they want to see more of RJ Delancey.
Right. Tons of moving pieces there. Delancey going up and working with the first team defense in practice on Tuesday meant that Jonas Tekona, who had spent this spring with the ones, took his snaps with the twos, and it could just be they want to give somebody a look. They brought Delancey in for a reason. He's got experience. I feel like, based on what Fickell said about Forkerian, one of the most improved guys, if I had to pick, it would be Forkerian and Holman on the outside. And then in the slot, it's up to the coaches to decide what they want to do. It's Austin Brown makes a lot of sense, but in a situation where they want him to be back at safety, Max Lofi is stating his case. I know you and I have both said we're a little bit surprised that Delancey has not gotten any of those reps in the slot because that is a position he played while at Toledo. I'm not saying that's out of the question at this stage. It just kind of feels like if your eight practices in and haven't done it at all, then they clearly view him as one of those outside guys. But it also could be a situation where there is some type of rotation. We saw it last year with Alexander Smith. Now, in part, that had to do with that he didn't necessarily take that role and run with it. I'm talking about Smith. You had other guys that the staff felt like might be better for the defense that they wanted to play, but maybe it's a situation where Delancey's getting, I don't know. This is speculation. 30% of the snaps, Forkerian gets 70%. And because I don't think you're taking Holman off the field based on what he did last season. But when you do that, there's going to be a lot of guys left behind not getting snaps. And there's an awful lot of talent, I think, at cornerback. So they've got a lot to figure out at that position for sure.
They do. It's an interesting spot for them for sure. So when we talked to the running backs last week, it was mentioned to Tywee Walker, like what's one of the biggest differences between here in Oklahoma? And he said the intensity. And I asked, is that because of all the tackling? And he said, yes, there's been more tackling. It feels like more live periods that we've seen from Wisconsin than ever before. It felt like that. And Luke Fickell kind of confirmed it yesterday. It's out of the norm. Like just going all the way back, in every spring practice we've ever covered, it's never been like this.
Yeah, and I thought that was one of the most notable things that Luke talked about is, and he's been willing to acknowledge some of the areas for growth that he learned in this year one at Wisconsin. But one of the things he has said on multiple occasions is not knowing what they had. And one of the reasons they didn't know what they had is they didn't go live. And this is what he said, that he said, we did it zero times last year in the spring, other than the second half of the spring game. We didn't do it much in fall camp. Then we get to game one and we recognize that we're Not very good tacklers. We're really poor in space. We don't hold on to the football well enough. We're in live situations. He cited them as ranking 120th in the country in fumbles lost. So, yes, there is a balance between going live and not wanting to get guys hurt. But clearly, Fickell and this staff believe they need to see a lot more from these guys in live rep situations, which is why he said on Saturday, practice that went 2.5 hours, there were roughly 65 snaps with full live tackling. And while we haven't tracked number of snaps with live tackling, it certainly has felt like in other practices there had been more live tackling as well.
Yeah, and again, I don't like whether it's live tackling or not, because it feels like at times that not the running backs aren't always expecting to get taken down to the ground. Is that accurate? Like we, especially earlier in camp where guys were getting taken to the ground, we saw a lot of guys getting upset and leading to a little bit more of the I'm not going to call them fisticuffs, but some of the pushing and shoving and some of the fights, the very minor fights that guys got into, especially early in camp, I felt like came after situations like that. So it to me is just an indication of kind of what they saw last year, and they don't want to be that type of team. Would you agree with it last year? Like I they looked poor in space. They looked as a poor tackling team, and it was not something they did a ton of last year, like in spring and in the fall.
I agree with all of it. I mean, if Luke is going out and saying that about his own team, it's very hard to disagree with it. Now, the question will be, will we look back on this as a mere talking point that didn't make a difference, or will this be something that shows up on the field next season? That remains to be seen. But at the very least, if you're a coach, you have to do whatever you can to address your deficiencies and make some changes. And they believe this is one change that could help eliminate some of those mistakes next season. But time will tell.
I think it's also worth noting that last spring, I don't like when Paul Chris is here, it felt like they had officials there on a regular basis. Last spring, it didn't feel like they had officials there at all. It was kind of just one guy throwing a flag. There's been officials there pretty much every practice, and they've been throwing flags too. A lot of stuff inside on the whole, like holding and that type of stuff. We've seen a lot of flags there. I think that has been another focus for them because of what they were penalty wise and the lack of discipline that just was evident. I feel like on a week to week basis for them. I think that may be something that is also notable for them at this point in spring. They've got, what, 7 more practices left here?
Yes.
In the spring, starting Tuesday morning.
Or Thursday morning.
Yeah, Thursday morning. Thank you. All these days are running together at this point. It's,
I know.
We're in the midst of camp. It's just, it is what it is. And then they'll be back out there on Saturday as well. And we'll be back on Sunday to talk all about it. Unless there's something else that we missed on, Jesse.
I think we've pretty much covered it, but there's always something with the football program. So that's the good news about covering them.
It definitely is. All right. We'll catch up on Sunday. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Zach.
All right. There he is, Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.